Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Indistinguishable from Magic Podcast with Rafal Loes and Chris Abramson. Chris and Rafal have learned not to take themselves too seriously. Fortunately, they take their profession seriously. This podcast features no-nonsense analysis, seeded with humor, in a way that lets us all laugh at ourselves, while we try to address some of the tough issues in security. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
What's up, friends? Welcome to Indistinguishable from Magic, the podcast that takes its name from the Arthur C. Clarke quote, "Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic." Buckle in, because we're not handing out participation trophies, but you know we're going to call some bullshit. My name is Rafal Loes, and joining me is my equally grumpy co-host, Mr. Chris Abramson, and we like to think of ourselves as the Statler and Waldorf of cybersecurity, because, face it, the InfoSec Goat Rodeo could use a couple of clowns. So drinks in hand, let's go.
All right, Indistinguishable from Magic, episode 11. And Chris and I are back. Hola.
Yo, yo.
It is another wonderful spring evening. I almost said morning. I don't know what time
it is. Dude, hey, we got spring temperatures coming to Chicago. It's going to be 65 degrees tomorrow, dude.
Yeah, we're going to be touching close to the 80s for a while. So it's going to be 32 tonight. It'll be cold here.
That's chilly. That is chilly for you guys.
It is. But I've got the spring planting started. I've got some flowers already coming up, and it'll be great. It's going to be fantastic. And all right,
I'm still waiting for the snow to melt, dude. I still got snow. I still got snow in the backyard. I'm serious.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a personal problem.
Oh man, going there.
You know, there's a solution to that, Chris.
Oh my God. No, let's just not.
Just a little south of the Mason-Dixon line. You can escape all the just everything that you dislike about the you know, those big northern states.
Let's be clear, though. It was below the Mason-Dixon line that got probably colder temperatures than Anchorage, Alaska this year. Yeah. Okay, so.
Texas. You know, they say everything's bigger in Texas, and the catastrophes included.
Yeah, no kidding.
When they get after it, they get after it.
They do.
My apologies to all of our Texas listeners who are still recovered by now. Hell,
I hope so.
But you guys had a rough ride. Oh man! All right. Well, speaking of rough rides, Chris, I promise I'm going to try not to rant on this one.
Hold on. Aren't you forgetting
something?
I know.
Trust me, I'm not forgetting that.
you're gonna need it for this one, buddy.
Yeah, this is a double pour episode. So, in my glass, I've decided I'm gonna go back to the I went Bullet 95 rye. Although I gotta tell you, two things I discovered over the weekend. If you guys are fans of the delicious brown juice, I'm gonna give you some homework post this episode to go find.
Oh boy!
So I'm showing Chris here because you guys aren't on the video, but there's a bottle of New Riff. It's called Backsetter, and it is something I've never heard of. It is called the Peated Backset Kentucky Straight Rye. So it's a peated rye. And, my buddy Andy over at the Whiskey Project here in Atlanta poured me a glass. He's like, "You got to try this." And I'm sitting here and I'm like, okay, there's the rye. It's nice. I'm like, oh, there's the peat. And there's the nice smell. And I'm like, so is it scotch? Oh, no, it's a rye. How could it be a rye if it tastes like it's crazy.
That's different.
They made fun of me because I sat there and like smelled it for like 30 minutes and kept going back and forth. And they're like, are you going to drink that? I'm like, I my brain doesn't know what to do with this. And the other one is this one right here. And it is called Three Chord. You ever had it?
I have seen a bottle of it. I have not had it.
Yeah. So we finished off Andy's Three Chord 12 Bar Reserve.
Nice.
It is a barrel proof. It is spectacular. And I say that because not only did we drink a little bit of it, but I went out and bought two bottles. And it's not like you can go to the local. The cool thing is I now have somebody that knows where to go get stuff. The bad news is when he can't get it, I have to go out of state and pay $40 shipping. Ooh. But on Tuesday, we'll be celebrating with some Trachord. Delicious.
Nice.
What about you, man? What you got in the glass?
So in the glass tonight, I decided to crack open the unopened bottle of High West Double Rye.
You know, that's one of the only High Wests I've never had.
The Double Rye? Oh, dude. You got... Pick up a bottle. And if you can't pick up a bottle, I'll send you a bottle.
I thought I heard you say you're going to send me a bottle of something.
I was going to send you a bottle of Campfire, but I can't get my hands on Campfire
anymore.
Yeah,
nobody can. I look, the local store here, the Total Wine here, says availability starting late May.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, my wife works for the company that owns High West.
Make all your special requests to Chris.
But I learned something interesting because she'll tell me stuff that's going on, blah blah blah. They do their runs and Campfire's run stopped. So they're waiting gotta do the aging process, They're getting ready for the next run.
Oh.
So yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So That's the backstory on that one. So
okay, so you got Double Rye. All right, this looks like a cube over there.
What's that?
You got a cube? Is that what's going on over there?
No, just
neat.
Neat. Just a lot.
It's a cool glass.
Just a lot.
It's just heavy.
I poured really heavy tonight. mainly because I plan on going right to sleep after this. I'm not kidding you. Sorry, deviating, folks. I apologize. We'll get to the security part of this in a minute. Didn't sleep Friday night. Didn't sleep last night. Today, I take the most amazing 20-minute nap, and I'm still freaking tired.
Oh, man. So, I finished off. I'm actually kind of proud of myself. I started I bike and I run, but I've been a little bit more round than I'd like to be, and I decided I was going to try one of those like personal trainer type of apps, and there's an 8-week challenge that they had. It's like 8 weeks of mix up different things like legs, cardio, Pilates, yoga, stretching, all kinds of things. But if you pay attention, you'll notice they get incrementally harder. So the week eight, the last week.
It's beating you to death, isn't it?
I finished it. I finished it on Saturday morning. The workout was called Can't Walk Next Day Legs. I'm not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I did the entire workout and I watched TV. I did some stuff yesterday. And I got up this morning, I'm like, yeah, my legs are sore, but not quite as sore as like 2 weeks ago. Before that, they had a workout where it was like a workout called the Iron Mike. You can kind of put your arms back and like all kinds of things and like jump squats and switch lunges and stuff. And I'm like, I got up the next morning. I was like, oh, I cannot get out of bed. I'm just going to work from right here all day.
Yeah, I remember the Facebook. I remember the Facebook post.
Yeah.
I sat there and just laughed.
Yeah, well, not all of us are in great. Hey, I got to get back to hockey shape. I want to go back and play. And as soon as this madness is over. All right, we got to get some security topics.
Yeah, we got to get into the real topics of the evening. So,
I think we should probably warn the listeners. We should probably warn the listeners. If you're going to be listening to this might go a little long. So pour yourself an extra one. Maybe light up a nice long cigar. Just buckle in. This is going to be a little bit of fun. If we start ranting, I'm just going to apologize in advance right now. So the topic is, Chris?
Email.
Security. Oh, man. I was literally on the news here in Georgia about this topic about 2 months ago.
Like literally on the news? Like you got
like literally interviewed me for the news.
Like some local small town.
Yes. CBS Atlanta. Shut up. Hey, listen, it's been a while, but, you know, I still know a thing. Like my T-shirt says, I drink whiskey and I know things.
Uh-huh.
But no, so local, Department of Children's Services had a email compromise. What that probably means is business email compromise. And all the crap that they store in email, including, I don't know, things like medical charts, bank accounts, diagnoses, notes.
Pause for a moment. Let's be clear. What piece of sensitive information is not in somebody's email system? Let's be clear about that.
I'm mostly certain the nuclear codes are somewhere in the email system.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it one bit. That briefcase that colonel's carrying around, that's got the party favors in it, okay?
All right. That's from after they pushed a button, so they can just be like, screw it.
No, but, I mean, look, come on. Let's be serious. I'll freely admit, and then everybody's gonna probably try to hack my email. Banking information, account information. I just redid my mortgage and all of that was through email. I mean, we put every piece of sensitive personal information through email today.
Well, I just refied and I had to send nothing over email because I used a modern loan company that did not require me to do any of that.
Oh, that is crap. You got at least one email from that mortgage company. You got at least one.
I got email from them, but I didn't have to send them like my W-2 or anything.
Oh, well, neither did I. I mean, but still, okay. I mean...
Yeah, there's still sensitive stuff in there. You're right. Well, so there's this – look, this whole thing was triggered because I HelpNet Security put up an article. And I'm a pretty regular reader of their Twitter feed, and I they got some interesting stuff. But it's partially self-serving for what it is. It was a company called Egress. You can imagine what they do. That did this survey, right? And it's kind of like one of these Pokemon surveys where they decided they have the analysis pre-written and you just got to go find the people that agree with them. But I think this one I can agree with, right? 95% of IT leaders said a client and company data is at risk on email. The other 5% were too drunk to respond. I don't know. Like, who says, my email is completely safe.
Well,
like,
okay. Let's start at the very beginning. What's the one application in a company that if it's down for more than 5 minutes, everybody screams bloody murder?
Email all day,
all day long.
You can literally have your corporate website down longer than your email system.
Yep.
So 83% of their respondents have an overwhelming 83% of their respondents of the organization have suffered data breaches via this channel in the last 12 months. That's not bad enough, like the stuff they cite in here is 24% was human error.
I believe it.
None of that shocks me.
I believe it. Well, I mean, you stop and think about it and, you know, you look at, I mean, look at healthcare organizations alone. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to total mind blank there for a second. HIPAA still requires you to fax most information. Okay. And for the brief nanosecond that you can actually email stuff, which actually it is more, and a lot more healthcare companies are starting to move to email. It is likely that you will screw up an email address, append an email address. The email system will,
hit reply all,
whatever. whatever it is that you did, and the breach laws don't signify a difference between whether or not that email went to a doctor that it shouldn't have, a customer or a patient that it shouldn't have, mm-hmm. or another person in your own department that it shouldn't have, that shouldn't have had viewable access to that information. So
yeah.
I can understand where that 24% comes from very quickly because.
Yeah. Well, how many of us listen, if you're listening to this and you have never accidentally hit reply all, hit send and go, oh shit.
Oh yeah.
Then I don't know who you are because
did that on Thursday.
I've done that multiple times and I'm like, that's going to suck. Oh, well, but so I'm going to give you guys a couple of these numbers, the key insights here. All right. I was going to list off some numbers. You can just listen and just imagine what your response would be. 95% of IT leaders believe that client and company data is at risk on email. Again, the other 5% were
too drunk to know.
Bed asleep. Yeah, right. Data is most at risk on email, with 83% of organizations experiencing email. 83% experiencing email data breaches. I already said the 25% human error. 42% of IT leaders say that half of all incidents won't be detected by their DLPs. That's not a surprise to anybody that installed DLP back in 2003.
42%.
Yes.
Don't think
almost half.
Don't think their DLP will pick it up.
Yes. I sense disagreement, Obi-Wan.
No, it's more shock.
Yeah, right.
We've been doing
it's a recognition of that.
We've been doing DLP for
almost 20 years.
Yeah, this one's old enough to drink.
yes, it is.
And 42% of leaders don't think that their DLP solution is going to pick up a data breach.
Yeah. What's with the other 58%?
Well, yeah, that I'd like to know what the other 58% are thinking. If 42% think that it won't pick it up, I didn't read the article, so I'm going off what you
There's
tell me.
There's not much to this one.
Yeah, but doesn't that surprise you? I mean, doesn't that really kind of like...
No, I mean, yes and no. Look, yes and no. It does surprise me for the same reason it surprises you, because I'm like, really? 42% of you are going, yeah, DLP does a great job. Really? Yes, because regex is on, you know, on social security numbers and credit card numbers are going to, in any possible way, be able to understand. Now, it's entirely possible. There are... I don't call it DLP anymore, because I don't think it's what it is, but like actual data leakage
pattern matching,
non-pattern matching soft, like actual stuff that looks for tags, sensitive data in your organization, and then looks for it to leave, whether it's a Word doc or, you know, whatever, some metric, whatever it is. So maybe the other 58% are like, yeah, no, we got the next gen advanced stuff and we don't care. But what that tells me is 42% of them out there.
That or they aren't storing their private data on their email systems.
Yeah. If you believe that, oceanfront property, Arizona, you and me.
I got a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn.
Right. Everybody's got a bridge to sell in Brooklyn. 79% of IT leaders report that they have deployed static email DLP solutions. Huh? So what that means is static. So remember Vontu back in, you know, millennia ago?
Yeah.
Yes, it's basically regexes. Like, right? I don't know who thinks that regex, like the regex-based systems are still a good idea, or why anybody has those running, but okay. 85% of employees are sending, this is bad. 85% of employees are sending more emails due to remote working. How much more can you send?
I do everything humanly possible not to send email anymore.
Seriously. I if somebody is on one of the 75 corporate chat clients that you know, myself or my customers use, I will use that. I will almost send a carrier pigeon to avoid putting stuff in email and sending, because you know at some point it's going to be public. It is. So it's, I don't know.
Too many paths, too many opportunities, too much. Well, and actually, now that most email systems have moved to the cloud, too much opportunity for mix up, in my opinion. I mean, I'm not kidding. I literally do everything humanly possible to avoid sending an email if I don't need to.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the problem is, everybody used to put everything in email, and that hasn't necessarily let up as much. But with the advent of other options, like if you're on O365 and you have OneDrive, you can securely just send a link that require that, you know, if it's a partner of yours. Oh God, go ahead.
I agree with you on this one. So we had a partner send us some data the other day. And even their company uses Google, and this is the first time I'd ever seen this. Google, he sent me the email with a link to his Drive.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't, back in the day, Drive, like if your email address was allowed access, you could read it, you could open it. No, it actually, it prompted me for a two-factor, like a, I won't call it two-factor, it's not really two-factor, but it prompted me for a code that it sent to my phone. It was
2FA.
Yeah, it was, yeah, it was kind of a challenge. I looked at it as more as kind of a challenge response kind
secondary
of thing.
Auth.
Yeah, secondary auth, whatever you want to call it. But I was impressed. I was actually, wow, that, okay. Had the email with the link leaked out, not going to happen.
Doesn't matter.
Not going to happen. And I actually think that's better than straight just like, let's dump all the data into an email and put the attachment on and send that off to somebody.
Well, so here's the other problem that email should eliminate the ability to put attachments in the end.
I agree. I think we should actually make it inoperable.
That needs to die. Yes.
Email, you should never be able to attach a Excel, Word, PDF, I don't care what it is, you should not be able to attach it. With the advent of, to your point, OneDrive,
Dropbox, 75 other options.
Yeah, there you can literally stick this stuff on a cloud file share system, lock it down, make it only accessible to the people you want it accessible to, and then send a link to that and go, your data that I want to share with you is here.
Right.
You may access it in this method. Versus, I'm now going to take a spreadsheet full of patient information, social security numbers, credit card numbers, and God knows what else, attach it to an email, and let that float through God knows how many servers until it hits the other side, and then it floats through God knows how many servers before it hits that person's inbox.
And then it sits in 700,000 different email clients. Like literally, if you send me something with an attachment, understand it's going to my iPad, my cell phone, my MacBook. It's going to be sitting in another inbox, another device that I have. Like it's literally going to be copied four times sitting locally somewhere.
Exactly. Because the moment you attach your iPad, your iPhone, your Mac, you probably got a Windows workstation sitting somewhere in your house. I'm betting you do.
Yeah.
You know, the moment you connected all of your email systems, it's divergent and going to the image closest to that one. So,
So look, I think the discussion for, and at the risk of ranting, yes, we understand, I think globally that, email is not the way to send stuff. The problem is this. It's going to take, one, a cultural transformation.
Massive.
You're going to literally have to unteach people something they've been learning for 25 years. If you want to get it to somebody, attach it as an email. Remind me later to give you my, before we close out, my funny fax joke with my doctor's office the other day. But if we taught people that if you want to send something, just email it.
If you think about it though, it's still like, if you look at the way that companies are structured, it used to be call this 1-800 number or fax your information to this 800 number. Okay. Which then shifted to email XYZ company support@blahblahblah.com.
Yeah.
Okay. I've seen this shift with just a handful of companies. They're, Slack channels, it's more like IM services now.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not the norm. The norm is still email your information to us. And it's not just like customer. It's not like, hey, I'm going to email support at like, I just bought some home camera, like security cameras for the house. And there, it's not that kind of stuff. It's like your doctor's offices use email, your banks use email, your mortgage companies use email. The only place that I haven't seen use an email is the IRS, because I just got done fighting with them as well, too. Okay.
Yes. If you want to communicate with the IRS, you have to have
– you
write a letter, send it off to Kansas City or wherever it goes, and wait.
Pray to God that they got it and somebody's going to call you. But I think you're right about the cultural aspect of email. for the last 20, 25, 30, maybe 35 plus years, email has been the driver for so many things. Hell, I guarantee you, if you want to reset your password on any website that you belong to, it goes through an email.
Yeah.
Because you get the little code through an email.
It absolutely positively,
which means if 100,000% does. Which means if I can own your Google account and figure out what bank you bank at, what mortgage company, well, I don't know if I really want your mortgage, but but if I can figure out your bank, I can figure out, you know, the PayPal account, whatever it is, I could probably reset your password and get to your stuff through your email. Guaranteed.
Yeah. No, I have not to mention absolutely.
The fact that most individuals probably store every email that they've had since day one.
Yeah. Well, because why would we delete anything? Yes, I know. Yes. That is seriously a problem, though. It is. So part one of this is getting people to change their behaviors, and particularly at the corporate level, and explaining why it's a problem, and then just, but part two of this is offering a better option.
Yep.
So I said earlier that there's a multitude of cloud storage options, things out there. There are.
Like, crap, I just realized something. I think I ranted more than you did. When does that ever happen?
We're not done yet. but there are, in fact, a metric crap ton of Dropbox, Box, Google, OneDrive, and
I think you just named the legitimate ones. Let's stop there.
Yeah. Yeah. So those, they're not super, I mean, they worked on their UI and they're not super user friendly. The whole process isn't user friendly. At one point I remember O365, if I was sending an email, it would say, would you rather send this email? I think it still does this. Would you rather send this as an email, or do you want to just send this link to the?
It still does that. No, it still does that. You can ask. You can actually choose link to your OneDrive, or do you want to actually embed the file as an attachment? Right. Yep.
And so that is, I think that's what we got to do. But we've got to have a better way to send things, because it's stupid easy, which mm-hmm. is what the problem is, right? I drag, drop, set, click the send button. It's not difficult, and the oops is our bad.
Yep.
But we've got to offer an alternative, and that's where I think it falls down, is because it's easy for us to say, well, just stop doing it. And we know, but how many times have you been like, you know, thinking about it and you need to send something, and there's just not an elegant way that will take me the 2.5 seconds that I can drag and drop and send an email. So I'm going, all right, I guess I'm going to do this email thing. Why am I still doing this?
Do you want to actually hear something funny? You want to know what I spend more time in than email, dude? I spend more time in Teams. I spend more time having real-time conversations via Teams with folks than I do sending emails anymore.
Yeah, we do that. We spend a good chunk of time in there too. So mini rant. I love Teams. Love Teams. I don't know why anybody in the world would use something different. For a corporate oriented environment like
that.
But we seriously, Microsoft, love you guys, but whoever runs the integration between SharePoint, OneDrive, and Teams, like get you guys in a room, figure the story out of who's gonna own what, how it's gonna work, and get back to us. Because sometimes you create a team and like a new SharePoint site comes up, and sometimes it doesn't. And then I'm trying to save from like an Excel spreadsheet to an online place, and I can see it in Teams, but Excel's like, doesn't exist. I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm going, but it's right there. I can drag and drop it and then open it from there. It just goes back to,
but I think not simple. Getting back to your point about what does the future hold? I think
more of breaches.
Well, yeah. Especially if we keep using email, but I think what the future holds is more real time communication between people. And it's going to be interesting because I think you're going to see two mass evolutions of things inside the enterprise. I think it's going to become more real-time communication because that's what's going to drive it. Yeah. Well, it's because it's what's going to drive agility. It's what's going to drive,
well, it's the only way we can do collaboration right now.
Right now, you're right. Aside from actually getting on a phone call with people, email's too slow. It used to be the day that you could walk up to somebody's desk and like say, "Hey, let's jump in the conference room here where there's a whiteboard and let's talk through this problem." Okay, none of us can do that right now. And actually, take it one step further. I work in a global community. I work with guys in the UK, and I don't have the luxury of like saying, "Hey, let's stop by their cube, knock on the door, and
but it's gonna be a day later."
I don't think anybody's paying for the flight for me to go over to the UK right now, but even lack of COVID, but real time, communication going back and forth. But God, I got to tell you, man, even as much as I try to use the real time communication, a lot of our teams still default to using email to communicate things. Like they revert back. It's there's like this.
Yeah.
It's like watching the human race go backwards. It's like the de-evolution of things. Why do we keep going back there?
We've got to start. We have to start at the enterprise side because that's where the biggest risks are.
Yep.
Right. Universally. So, I thought of something as we were talking about it. The major thing that we have that may get us away from email as a transport mechanism. Because we used to be like, "Hey, take a look at this file. Let me just send it to you real quick." And now my inclination is like, no, don't send that. Where is it on SharePoint? I'll just open the same file you've literally looking at. And if I make the change, you see it right away. It's not because what was email always terrible at? 75 copies of the same file. Nobody has any idea who has the current one. If you keep it centrally stored, you've got revision control. You've got 10 people sitting in the same document, right? So there are many advantages to not doing things over email. But so there's the other part of this too that we didn't talk about and I want to dive into before we get completely out of time is there – the reason I don't like the way that Gmail works. I like folders. I like a clean inbox. I don't like labels and stuff where everything is still there. Like their search feature just isn't great. You get an email a year and a half ago. You try to search for it. God knows what happened to it. Maybe I'm just too stupid to use it, which is entirely possible. But all that to say, we have finally started rolling out like the thing that Google pushed and Microsoft copied is multi-factor auth on email.
Yes.
There's a couple of email boxes, which I won't share with y'all for obvious reasons, but every time one of you, maybe not one of you, but one of them out there tries to reset the password on my Twitter account, I get an email to an email account that says, "Hey, somebody's trying to reset your, is this you trying to reset your account? If so, click this link." And I'm like, "No, obviously, because I'm not doing it, one. And two, MFA, so no again." But the place where I have all my password where I have a lot of my password resets go, it needs I have a strong password, which frankly, I don't even remember because it's in one of my password saves, right? If you still try to remember password, folks, it's 2021, don't. and it's got the equivalent of a hardware token plugin to get to that email box. Okay. If I lose that token, granted, my email is absolutely toast, but that's a risk I take because I want that high security, right? So if you're going to try to own one of my accounts, you're going to beat me up or find a loophole 0 day in that system particularly and steal my key. But at that point, there are way easier ways to get to my stuff than trying to, anyway. That's all to say that multi-factor auth should be a standard on every email box, period.
Staple. total staple security control on email. Well, especially, I mean, especially for the consumer, but I know most consumers would hate it because they don't want the extra step. They don't want to deal with it. Only
I enabled it for my folks on their Gmail account. And my dad was like, this is so hard. Every time I want to open my Gmail, I have to look at my phone. I'm like, yes, you do. But you know what, Dad? Like your company sends your financials to there, like your, you know, whatever. Like if something happens, right? At least you have to have the phone.
I tried to do it for my dad and he ripped it off the next day. He's like, I'm not doing this. I'm like, but you realize that your email is literally the key to everything it is you do. It is literally the one spot that somebody just could, you know, if they get to it, you're screwed financially, personally, you are screwed reputationally, whatever you want to call it. I mean,
well, Well, with my parents, it was very simple. Like many of you CISOs out there, my dad didn't get a say in it. I just did it, and he just has to deal with it now. He's getting around to understanding why, and he's now happy with it. But
I'll try again in a few months. We'll see what happens with mine.
I'm telling you, just change it and be like, no, you just have to do this now.
Yeah, sorry, that's the one unfortunate thing about having a parent that worked in the IT industry for many years. No,
he'll take it off.
He'll take it off. He knows how to figure it out. So,
yeah. you have failed as an InfoSec son. You know that? You have not properly taught your parent.
Dude. Well,
I should say. I could say that, but yeah, let's not go there. Significant others and whatnot. Listen, the email thing, the DLP part aside, I don't know. The future of DLP is a crystal ball that I don't have. I'm lost on what's going to happen with DLP.
It's going to be it. As long as we have email systems, DLP will be a staple. And you want to know why?
Because auditors.
Thank you. PCI, HIPAA. Whatever other four letter acronym, thing you want to come up with, it is a mainstay of most. It is literally the second checkbox on all of the audit reports.
Well, listen, I think that DLP needs to evolve.
Yes,
it is evolving in a couple of organizations, but I think the thing that much like a lot of other evolutionary steps in cybersecurity, the thing that we're all waiting on is the ability to identify and somehow tag data that is sensitive, that is important, not by regex pattern matching inside, 16 digits, that's a credit card. No, stop it, right? We need to be intelligent about what goes through the system and what we care about, because I should be able to send 16 numbers separated by hyphens all I want. If it's actually paired with other information and there's a context to it, which is what we still, the systems out there still suck.
What we're missing is the AI piece behind a good DLP system to
I hate you. You said AI. Stop it. Just use algorithm. It makes more sense.
What? You don't like the little bots?
We need smarter algorithms.
You don't like the little bots that are doing things for you in the background, Raph?
Oh, it's late at night and I don't have the energy to argue with you right now.
But seriously, call it algorithms. Call it behavioral analysis of the data. You're right. We haven't... It hasn't, most DLP systems have not evolved past the regex pattern matching methodology that we have today. It's unfortunate. And the reality is that the data we're passing through email, the formats are evolving. I mean, I watched one DLP system fail miserably because when we went from, I think it's Word 2012 to, I think 2016, and Microsoft decided to redo all of their stuff in JSON format behind the covers. I think it was JSON. Was it JSON? Yeah, I think it was JSON formatting. XML. Sorry, no, not JSON. My bad. I got JSON on the brain because I was talking about other stuff earlier. XML formatting in their data, it completely changed the methodology at which some of these DLP systems can see into those files. So,
well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, the technology we're using to capture whether or not we have data going out of our companies hasn't evolved with the platforms that are designed to allow data to go out of the company.
Look, that and I think Microsoft, as often as I say, I think Microsoft gets it right. The only way to do DLP properly on email is to have it natively
embedded in the system. Yep. Yeah.
The third party stuff just doesn't work anymore.
Well, yeah, it's getting harder and harder. Yeah, it's getting harder and harder. You can't shim yourself at your proxies or your MTAs anymore. You have to be at the core system. You have to be able to do that analysis right there in the system.
You can't just do a send mail chain.
No. Oh, did he actually say that?
Was it Qmail? Yeah.
Qmail.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's been a while. All right. I'm going to tell you my funny with the doctor's office. I had a follow up scheduled post this whole COVID thing to prove that I'm still alive, and
you got a pulse right?
As far as I know. So they're like, well, can you? I said, well, I just recently got a test. She's like, well, can you fax it to me? I said, no, I'm sorry, I can't. She's like, why? I'm like, well, I can't fax it from here. She goes, well, where are you? I said, 2021, where are you?
Oh my God.
She started laughing. And I was like, for a second, it got quiet. I'm like, I'm about to get hung up on. And then she starts giggling. The receptionist starts giggling. And she goes, that's the best one I've ever heard. I'm like, that's good because I stole it from somebody else on Facebook like years ago on Twitter maybe. But that it worked. It was funny. She's like, all right, can you email it? I'm like, how about I just bring it in? I'm 5 minutes away. She's like, yeah, can you do that? I'm like, yes, I can. Like, I'd rather not send you my
email. So you chose the physical method of getting the data to them. You walked it through the door.
I am not emailing a copy of my passport. I'm sorry. I do not have the faith in my doctor's office having secure email. I don't care what their HIPAA privacy policy says, all 16 and a half pages of it or something.
Sorry.
That's a good place to end, isn't it?
I think so. I think that's a good place to end it. Let's put this topic in the bed of, in the back, or we'll set it with the dead horse and kick it down.
Jeez. All right, you're done now. Well, look, I think the lesson we learned from this is tall porters are good when talking about this. Although I don't advise you to do this at the office. I mean, unless you look at a really cool office. But
no kidding.
my office is great. We can double port. Although I work from home, so we're gonna have to continue to evolve our game and functionally and fundamentally change the behavior of our corporate employees, which will then influence how they behave at home, to get people away from sending sensitive stuff or anything as an attachment or in line in email. Email is not meant to be. It was never meant to be ultra private. The various attachments and shims and PGP encryptions we've added to it haven't made it more usable, which means if it's not usable, it's not going to be secure. I promise, because it'll never get used. And I think that the end result is, we're in a place where email is more and more the primary vehicle for sensitive information exchange, whether it's text, whether it's Word docs, whether it's pictures of your passport, God help you, whatever it is. And we're going to keep seeing breaches because two-factor authentication is not common enough on email. End of rant. No?
No, nothing. I got nothing.
Well, in that case, I'm going to give you the final word, Chris.
ARPANET. Because that's how old these email systems are, and it's time to evolve.
Listen, I implemented my first MS. I was implementing MS Mail back in the day. That is
that's
that
old.
Doesn't date me. If that doesn't date me, then, you know, Google that. Thanks for listening, you guys. Chris, it's been a blast as always.
Oh, I loved it. This was a good one.
We just got to get the stuff to change. That's all.
We do.
Magic wand. Poof. Done.
Pixies and fairy dust. Unicorns.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, you guys. It's been great having you on board. And another episode's done. So we're just going to let this one fade out. And we'll get you later. Hey, thanks for listening to ITSP. And check out some of the other cool shows they're doing and a million different channels. And there are some really cool shows on here. I'm pretty excited to listen to some of them. And yeah, I'm totally stoked. Cool network. So, bye then. See ya. Adios.
Good night.
And cut.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Indistinguishable from Magic podcast with Rafal Loos and Chris Abramson. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.